As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
Well, that could have gone better. Welcome to Time's Ours. We will have a lengthy conversation about the Kansas City Chiefs' loss on Sunday Night Football to the Baltimore Ravens. And there are lots of different things that I'm sure we'll be able to dissect over the course of this episode. And I don't think any of them will necessarily be the wrong thing to focus on. There's so much, and that will be... that'll be the theme of this edition of Time's Ours. The presenting sponsor for today's episode of Time's Ours is Visa, a network working for everyone. I'm Josh Obrisco, alongside Nate Taylor, no Seth Kaiser this afternoon, evening. What time is it? Who cares? But Nate, you flew to Baltimore for this game, flew back real early this morning to get back to Kansas City. And I'm wondering if that trip felt worth it to you, the way that that game unfolded.
Sure, it's always great to see a game in person. It was my first time at, let me make sure I get this right, M&T Bank Stadium.
That sounds right.
Yeah, you know, it was a classic Sunday night game where the team that, you know, our listeners root for made some critical errors. There are some lingering issues. And, you know, Josh, I don't think in the history of Patrick Mahomes' five-year career, he's ever thrown a soul-crushing interception.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think Sunday's game was the first time that he had thrown an interception that essentially turned the tie. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, most times it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. Some team makes a mistake, and Patrick Mahomes and his teammates sort of capitalize on this, obviously most notably the Cleveland Browns from the season opener. But the idea that Patrick Mahomes made a mistake, he said afterwards that it was probably his worst interception of his career. I tend to agree with him. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I don't know how many players on the defensive side of the ball can feel good about their performance from last night.
And that's the thing. I mean, I was curious to see kind of where you would go first. I think anytime Mahomes makes a mistake, that's noteworthy. I'm quite obviously going to talk about the play calling late in the game because that's something that I, you know, feel pretty qualified to lose my entire mind over. And then also we have the entire defense, and I've got some stats on that, and I'm curious to see where you kind of think they go from here. The funny thing is that they lost by 1 point on the road against a really good football team.
Yes.
In prime time, and that mm-hmm. very rarely is soul-crushing. It is deeply frustrating. But also, I'd like to read a tweet from regular Time's Ours tweeter and listener at ReedKC on Twitter. And this was at 7:30 last night. This was right as the game was starting. Last time I heard, actually, this might have, no, I'm sorry. This was right after the episode went out. This was well before the game. This is a couple days before the game.
Mm.
They tweeted, the last time I heard at Real MN Chiefs fan this unconcerned about a Chiefs opponent on Times Ours, it ended up being Gruden's victory lap game. And I saw that when it happened and thought, huh, that's kind of interesting and probably correct. At least in terms of like teams that might have a shred of competence in there. And so if we'd like, I mean, there are a lot of places we can point fingers, but I'd be happy to point a finger at Seth too.
Of course. I mean, he's not here yet again.
Yeah.
Cursing the team. He's not being as accountable as we would like him to be in this locker room, but you know, it is fascinating that I got on a plane, Josh, and was really of the mindset that, man, we're going to learn a lot about the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm.
And we did. We learned plenty. But I do think we learned a lot about the Chiefs, and I just wasn't necessarily expecting that. Because when it's 35-24, I'm just of the mindset that, yeah, the Ravens threw a couple really nice shots. Lamar Jackson, you know, sort of elevated his play after a slow start. And this is just the likely outcome. You know, it's just, you can't really anticipate the Chiefs being this bad when they've been so, I won't say dominant over the Ravens, but the better team. And that includes being on the defensive side of the ball from what we saw a year ago. And this isn't some new scheme that they haven't seen before. But I think for the Chiefs defense now, a lot of this will come down to not only effort and better assignments, but can you get 11 guys on the field who are going to work together on a more consistent level versus one or two guys sort of popping? Mm-hmm. But the Ravens didn't sugarcoat anything. And I think there are two thoughts here that sort of blow my mind from just a consensus of like what I've seen on Twitter, what the discussion has been this morning from a national media standpoint, even people back in Kansas City. And it's just, Josh, I don't know what Steve Spagnuolo could have done last night that really would have made a massive difference outside of maybe playing Juan Thornhill more. Mm-hmm. But schematically, I mean, Mike Dana missed tackles. Chris Jones wasn't great. Frank Clark didn't do enough. Dan Sorensen led the team in missed tackles. It wasn't like there weren't guys in position to make plays. They just didn't. And so for as much of the, I guess, blame and vitriol that's been put on Steve Spagnuolo, I don't know if that's the wisest, you know, and I understand fans are emotional and that's totally fine, but I'm not sure. When I rewatched the game, I went and I go, yeah, like there's Lamar or there's the ball carrier or there's a one-on-one matchup when you're trying to cover a tight end or a receiver, and the scheme wasn't beaten. It was just the player for the Ravens performed at a much higher level than the player for the Chiefs on about 80% of the snaps. And so what are you going to do if you're a coach and you just say, well, some of these same strategies worked previously because those players played better. This collection did not play well last night. I'm somewhat confused by the Tyrann Mathieu penalties, but like, that's neither here nor there in the grand scheme of things, just because there were a couple times where I think it was first and 25 and second and 24, and they converted both of those. So, I mean, so I don't know. It'll be fascinating to see what the coaching staff does from here, but I don't really see, like, I don't really feel like the Chiefs got quote unquote outcoached from a defensive standpoint. I just don't think the players played well.
Which to me, I think might actually be more damning, because here are a couple of stats that caught my eye. I think one of these was last night. One of them was from this morning. This one from Brandon Kiley in St. Louis. The Chiefs are spending 25% of their 2021 cap on the defensive line. 25% on the defensive line exclusively. That's the highest percentage in the league. Only five other teams are over 18%. They've had three combined tackles for loss during the first two games. And then Kent Swanson from KCSN tweeted out. Hold on, I'm scrolling. Here we go. On top of the defensive line spending, they have two top 100 picks up front with Naughty and Saunders, two second-round picks at linebacker. Obviously, Willie Gay didn't play, but it's Gay and Bolton. And then the fifth highest cap hit at linebacker in the NFL this year in Hitchens. The only place that has not really been a huge, like, gaping weakness has been in the cornerback position, where they have spent no money as long as Spags has been here, at least. And I don't know what you do with that, because I think people like to blame coaches because it's easier to fire a coach or blame one coach or one coordinator or whatever mm-hmm. for a bunch of losses. It's a lot easier to do that than to blame 8 to 15 defensive players. I don't know what you do with all of that invested in a defense that has looked this bad for two games in a row.
Yeah, and let's pour more salt on the wound, mm-hmm. Josh, because, you know, you sometimes go into games, regardless of the outcome, as a writer, and you're like, I just have to make sure people are aware of the circumstances in the game. And so it's a paragraph that I knew I was going to write, whether they won or lost, but now it looks even more glaring based on everything you just said, and the idea that, yes, it's a lot easier to just blame a multitude of things on one person that is simplifying things in a way that, you know, isn't really helpful. Mm-hmm. But let's just go through the list. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley out because of his back and ankle. Left guard Tyree Phillips, he was out because of a knee. Running back J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, torn ACLs. Justice Hill, another running back, torn Achilles. They were out two receivers in Rashad Bateman, a groin, and Miles Boykin, a hamstring. I mean, now the roster building from the Ravens is impressive because they didn't get their doors blown off, but they were playing severely under man.
Yep,
and they still ran the ball essentially at will, even though they were down two scores. And I give a lot of credit to John Harbaugh and Greg Roman for saying, no matter, even though we're down 11. Our greatest advantage is doing this. Mm. And they executed in a ruthless fashion. And I think the Chiefs defense is still too dependent on turnovers.
Yeah.
The idea that, well, somebody's going to make a play on this drive. And that's a good thought to have. But you can't do that all the time, where it's like, why don't we just be solid on this second down to make third down a little bit more predictable, and then let's tackle somebody or get pressure on the quarterback or not present an easy option if they're passing the football on the opposite side of the field. Too often, you're going to need a play like where Mike Hughes, and I think people will forget this, but Mike Hughes makes an excellent play, forces a fumble, and you're like, that is literally as bending and not breaking as you can get up, but we just broke because the ball went right into the other guy's hands for a touchdown. Tyrann Mathieu coming back was a huge advantage for the Chiefs, but at the same time, he acknowledged when I asked him after the game, I mean, Hollywood Brown is running wide open because there's miscommunication in the back end. So, for them to invest this much in Chris Jones, and for the experiment to have its first, like,
he looked like a defensive tackle playing defensive end.
And they ran at him constantly.
Yeah.
The blueprint's been out here for a long time. And the Chiefs have tried to mitigate it to some degree. Guys, I'm not sure if Dan Sorensen and the Cliff are at one another, but they're getting closer, and I'm concerned about that because so much trust is put on Tyrann Mathieu and Dan Sorensen to kind of interchange all these roles, but I don't know if Sorensen can cover a starting tight end in this league anymore.
Oh, I know. I know if he can.
I don't know. I don't know if he can. I don't know if he's as sure of a tackler in the open field as he was before. Like, the dirtiness isn't really dirty anymore, Josh, because he's whiffing. Mm-hmm. He leads the team in missed tackles so far through two games. And he's on the field because he's a great, he's supposed to be a serviceable, above average, hybrid safety linebacker kind of role. As I said on Twitter, it's Frank Clark's first game. He did make some plays, but he did not put pressure on the quarterback. So we are basically at a standstill of the 2020 season. Nick Bolton, when he does touch you, you go down. Problem is that the Ravens have a little bit more speed and explosiveness than the Browns showed, and that was sort of highlighted in the game. I told people that we should give this Chris Jones experiment a month, but everything I just mentioned, I think any coach, any competent team will know that there's holes on this defense when there might be possible solutions. I asked Andy Reid today, why did Juan Thornhill play, you know, in the first half, or in the first quarter, excuse me. By the way, you want to know who was on the field during Tyrann Mathieu's two interceptions, Josh?
Was it Juan Thornhill by any chance?
Yeah, Juan Thornhill was on the field.
Interesting.
Was Juan Thornhill covering the deep middle? What did it force Lamar to just say, I got to fit a ball in a tight window? Yep. You know, Sammy Watkins fell down. That's fine. But you know who was not on the field for Hollywood Brown's touchdown in the middle of the field?
Well, I guess Juan Thornhill.
Yeah. Andy Reid, and you know, I rarely do this, but it makes sense. Just because what I'm about to read you, ladies and gentlemen, is a quote from Andy Reid today on Monday, September 20th, 2021. Quote, Juan and Dan do certain things the same and a couple things different, but it all kind of equals out. And at that point, statistically and with my eyes, that's not true anymore. Andy Reid went on to say, quote, Dan really had the better training camp, maybe a little bit more consistency there. We love Juan and where he's getting himself back to where he was during his rookie season. I don't want to take anything away from the effort that he's put forward to do that. Quote, I think we'll take it step by step. I do not want to be overreactionary two games into a 17-game season, but this subject is about as close as I get. And I know fans were screaming at me, and it reminded me of, you know, being in Baltimore, of course. It reminded me of, like, where's Wallace? And just everybody was like, where is Juan Thornhill? And I think if there's any change that you can make immediate, it's to at least have Juan Thornhill be on the field equal amount of times as Dan Sorensen, because at least Juan Thornhill's been a much surer tackler. He's a better deep defender. He has better ball skills. That's all I got, Josh. How you feeling, man?
Juan Thornhill played 11 snaps in this game, which was 14% of the Chiefs' offensive snaps. And Dan Sorensen played 76, which was 100% of the defensive snaps. If you've got a couple of players that you think do a lot of things similarly, that is a buck wild split to have. I mean, it's just nonsense. And I think Andy Reid, there were some things in his presser last night and a couple things today that I just think were some of the most paper thin, sort of flimsy excuses, explanations, whatever. I mean, like, he's not going to tell us what's actually going on most of the time, and I understand that. That one's bonkers. You mentioned Frank Clark and Chris Jones. I just pulled up the snap counts just a few minutes ago because I hadn't seen them yet today. And I kind of assumed that Frank Clark was on some sort of a pitch count. He played 70% of the snaps. It's 53 snaps. I don't remember a damn thing that he did. And again, you know, that feels a whole lot like 2021. Chris Jones, I remember seeing frozen on the outside. He played 75% of the snaps. It's 57 snaps. You have a unit where the guys that are supposed to just be, you know, a part of the front, a part of the team or whatever, are not doing anything in particular. And your playmakers, with the exception of Matthew in the first quarter, and then not really after that, just sort of just turn into ghosts. I don't know what you do with that. I really don't.
Well, if we were trying to solve this problem, and it's a bigger problem than I think we anticipated, probably Steve Spagnuolo and his coaching staff. It's like, okay, what can we get better at immediately? Is it tackling? A year ago, they had some issues against the Chargers in week two, and so this is somewhat similar, but they actually improved it in week three when they went to Baltimore and, you know, essentially had Lamar Jackson's worst career game in a primetime setting where I think he only had 97 passing yards. So can they improve tackling? Yes and no. I mean, you can only practice it so much. Spagnuolo basically said that they have one day a week where they wrap up, but they don't take their teammate to the ground. Obviously, you don't want to have an injury during the middle of the season during practice. Can you get better in the red zone? Well, Josh, it can't get worse, okay? 8 trips in the red zone for the Browns and or Ravens. 8 touchdowns surrendered. So technically they can get better at that. How soon, how quickly, I don't know.
Talking about tackling in red zone for 2 years.
For 2 years.
They're professional football players. They should know how to tackle. Spags is a good defensive coordinator. Why is the red zone so confusing? That's where your defense should be at its best.
Yes.
That's when it's the hardest for an offense to do something.
Yes. Or an offense has to be so creative that it creates a mismatch in a very quick manner. Or you just need to have a Hall of Fame tight end like Travis Kelce. But, the Ravens did nothing special. Again, this is why I say, like, did the Ravens really outcoach the Chiefs? No. Mike Dana is responsible for containment, and then he gets sucked in, or he stands flat-footed and watches Lamar Jackson beat him in a race that we all know he can't win.
And so, they came into this year pretty much expecting him to be their second or third defensive end. Like,
yes,
I don't really blame Mike Dana. You know, somewhere on here, the $26 million or whatever for Frank Clark has an impact. Or paying, I haven't heard Jaron Reed do anything.
And this is, yes, yes.
1 year, $6 million, frees up Chris Jones to move to the edge. What are we doing?
Yep. I will tell you, we haven't heard a lot of Jaron Reed's name. He has underwhelmed in 2 games. I'm going to look this up because, you know, it's only fair to Jaron Reed.
While you look it up, here's a stupid hot take that's probably not fair, but I keep thinking about the Chiefs outbid everybody for Juju Smith-Schuster. But what if they added $2 million more to that and said, I'm not really worried about Jaron Reed because we've got 2 top 100 picks in the interior and Tershawn Wharton and all this other stuff. Like, is that, it's just there.
Yeah. I mean,
talking about Brett Veach, his cap management is a third rail because you're going to find, you know, guys who think that, you're going to find fans who think that Brett Veach is the worst GM in the history of football, and they're wrong, and you're going to find fans that think that Brett Veach is untouchable whenever the reality is that he has 3 Hall of Famers on his offense all at once, and that's also not a healthy way to go about it.
Jaron Reed, through 2 games, and again, just 2 games, has 3 tackles, 1 quarterback hit, no other stats. They've got to figure this out very quickly.
Was he their biggest... At least their biggest 1-year signing? I mean,
yeah, on the defensive side of the ball. He was their biggest defensive acquisition outside of Nick Bolton, obviously being the second-round pick, the first of 2 second-round picks. You know, I think Mike Hughes has actually been their best newcomer so far.
And he played like 20... hold on, I got the numbers. He was losing snaps for Rashad Fenton for whatever reason. He played... I've lost it now. He played 22 snaps. That's 29% yesterday.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of this is perplexing. And I get why fans should be frustrated. The funny part of all of this, and I have to bring some humor in it, is that Lamar Jackson had one of those, this is what it felt like in 2019 when he was a unanimous MVP award winner, mm-hmm. and they still only beat you by 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to remind people, the Chiefs were in control for a majority of this game. The best red zone defense the Chiefs have provided all season is quietly on 2-point conversion plays. Mm-hmm. But Mahomes, with 3 minutes left, goes down the field just with effortlessness. And I get Andy Reid saying, let's not give the ball back to Baltimore. I think big picture-wise, some fans are forgetting that Baltimore had one more timeout left. So the reason that they called the running play was to, of course, force Baltimore to call his timeout. You go to third down. I would assume at that point you throw a, you know, highly successful short pass, hope somebody breaks the tackle, i.e. Travis Kelce, and gets a first down, and then you can really milk the clock out before you bring Harrison Butker out. Now, Andy Reid did not say that that was the strategy. It was actually Patrick Mahomes who acknowledged, mm-hmm. Yes, we were playing for Butker.
Yes, he said that in the postgame. He said we were within field goal range, and we were playing for the field goal.
Yes, and so...
And at that point, one of the veins in my forehead exploded.
Now here's a little bit of pushback, Josh. The Ravens know that too. And so the Ravens have been playing a lot of cover three with some cover two principles, or just straight out like, where's Tyreek Hill? He's not getting past us. So as you saw on the touchdowns with Pringle and Kelce, that's stuff underneath that eventually, you know, goes for just incredible yak yardage. The Ravens were like, we can't give up a touchdown here. We can't do what the Las Vegas Raiders did last year in the same Sunday night primetime slot. So, okay, that's fine. The Chiefs have never seen Harrison Butker miss a game-winning field goal. So there is some assurance as you can get in that sort of scenario. But the Ravens, I think, weren't going to... The Ravens were doing a good job, too, of like, no one's going to get behind us. So playing for the touchdown will be a little bit more difficult because that will force Mahomes to maybe throw the ball into a tighter window versus soft coverage where you are supposed to get those 5-6 yard plays that maybe go longer depending upon how Baltimore, whether they keep, you know, the Chiefs in bounds or they tackle better in the open field and obviously the Chiefs defense. The second thing that's kind of annoyed me. Are you ready, Josh?
I'm so ready.
So the first thing is, of course, just a reminder. The first thing is, well, I mean, it's just got to be the coach, right? I mean, Daniel Sorensen is in the spot and he misses the tackle. Or, I mean, we are rush lane discipline, but Alex Okafor loses containment and there goes Lamar Jackson. And now Anthony Hitchens is missing open tackles. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it appears that Lamar Jackson has nobody to throw to, but then all of a sudden Hollywood Brown's wide open. Cause what? Like, cause the players miscommunicated. It's mostly a player issue on the defensive side of the ball. The second thing that annoyed me is everyone screaming that, like, well, you see what John Harbaugh did? See what he did? Mm-hmm. Kept the ball in Lamar Jackson's hands. Which is to completely forget that Lamar Jackson threw a pass, short of the sticks, I mind you, to Sammy Watkins on third down. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people get so narrow driven or narrative driven where it's like, well, see, it was a fourth down call. NBC's like, you want to go for it? And in a, you know, Friday Night Lights moment, Lamar Jackson's like, hell yeah, which I would question if he didn't say hell yeah.
Yeah.
But like, whatever. Yeah. It's a great touch. And by the way, even my wife, Holly, acknowledges, takes some measure of pleasure in knowing that the Baltimore Ravens finally beat the Chiefs and acted like they had won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
like really, like, jumping around like we just won the AFC Championship. Which, again, it's September. It's September, fellas. But everyone expected Andy to just keep the ball in Patrick's hands without acknowledging that if you do that, DeMarcus Robinson, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and yes, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they're going to have to either A, catch the ball, secure it, gain yardage, not do anything dumb, and not turn the ball over. Patrick Mahomes can't do everything. Now, granted, that's a lot. I know I just said something that kind of maybe annoyed our listeners, but again, the team you root for has Patrick Mahomes, and yet he can't do everything. So as much as you can say, I want to keep the ball in Patrick's hands, that's not situational football, in my opinion, when you know whatever happens on that second down play, and let's say Clyde gets 2 yards instead of -2 in the fumble, of course, well, it's still a third and manageable. And yes, you will put the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands, but then he's got to throw it to somebody. And that person has to not drop it for an incompletion, which would obviously save clock for the Ravens. They have to catch it. They have to, you know, get upfield if they're quote-unquote DeMarcus Robinson, who, by the way, nice improvement between week 1 and week 2, sir, and not turn the ball over. So, as great as Mahomes is, I think he's correct in saying that, like, at some point we're going to need Clyde to do a better job at that, obviously, to mill clock at. And it sort of makes people forget that all the times last year where they trusted Tyreek Hill for all those reasons, and every time he executed well, but that's two teammates and the offensive line working very well together to put a game away. And it's not just all on the quarterback. Even though we all like to scream, see, he put it in Lamar's hands, and let's not acknowledge that Alejandro Villanueva just moved Chris Jones to Saturn to make the hole very easy for Lamar to get 2 yards and to, of course, end the game.
I would like for Patrick Mahomes to have the ball in his hands to make those decisions in real time. That is the choice that I would make, because if you say if the passing window isn't there, I trust Patrick Mahomes. I know he had an interception that I'm going to come back to, but, like, I trust him to not make terribly foolish mistakes on a regular basis. I trust him to try to find the safe completion, even if it's to Travis Kelce for 4 yards, and see what Kelce does after that to keep the clock moving, etc.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other thing that was frustrating me about the late play calling, though, is that we had a pretty good sample size of what was and wasn't working.
Yes.
We can go back to the drive that ended in Mahomes' forced interception there.
Yep.
Where they were up by 11, by the way.
Yep.
They were up by 11. But do you know where that desperation started? Daryl Williams for -5. So then you end up out there on 2nd and 15. And Patrick Mahomes flips it to Tyreek Hill for a few yards. And then you get this desperation flip that turns into a pick. And that's not good. The Ravens then go score. The Chiefs get the ball back with it early in the fourth quarter, still mm-hmm. up by 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see this same cycle here that leads to a very predictable place. Clyde for 4. That's fine. 2nd and 6. Okay. Mahomes converts it. They're going to Mecole Hardman. And then it's Clyde for -2. Now we're talking about 2nd and 12. And Mahomes goes short to DeMarcus Robinson. And now it's 3rd and 9. And he can't get to Tyreek Hill. That drive started with a wasted play, or that series right there started with a wasted play that cost them 2 yards that took away some of the options that they have to be the best version of this Chiefs offense. And then even after that, then the Ravens go score. The Chiefs are down 1. And you make, he has the excellent pass to Byron Pringle. He gets it to Travis Kelce. He goes to Kelce again. They're moving. They're on the 30, or they're on the 32 at that point.
Yes, they're in field goal range. Yes.
Right. And even if Clyde holds onto the ball there, it's a loss of 2 that sets them back again. And you feel okay about them converting, I suppose. But you want to keep the clock moving. That's fine. You have 1.5 minutes. But the running game had been awful, especially late in the game. The Ravens were not getting fooled by any of that. There was contact behind the line of scrimmage, and we can make it about Clyde. We can make it about the offensive line, this extremely expensive offensive line that did not do much of a job of creating running lanes all night long, which is a bit concerning. But also, yep. we're at the 30-some minute mark of this show. And it hasn't come up yet because there are other more concerning things. But that's not a great look for everything they invested in that offensive line. But I just don't understand. And I think we're going to have a moment like this pretty much every game where Andy Reid does something where I go, man, I just feel like you're working too hard whenever one of your options can be, hey, give Pat an RPO. Give him I'll make some bleep up Travis Kelce route to keep an eye on. The Ravens did a great job of limiting Tyreek Hill, but let Mahomes make that call in the pocket and trust that he's not going to make stupid decisions. Again, he had maybe the worst pick of his career earlier on, but if Andy Reid thought from the sideline that he thought Mahomes would do that again, I don't believe that he did, because that'd be an incredibly foolish thing to believe of Patrick Mahomes. And I just don't need, you have a chance late in the game, playing for the field goal, playing for the touchdown, whatever. You give me a chance to say Patrick Mahomes can make that call from the pocket, or you're going to put it in Clyde's hands, I'll take the former. I think it's working too hard to try to talk yourself into trying to run the clock out there.
Now, one
thing... It also wasn't a gimme field goal, by the way. Like, yeah, they were in range, but right. It was not an easy one.
Correct. And so, schematically, when I rewatched the game, one thing that is somewhat telling is... The Ravens sort of made an adjustment where they spread their linemen and their edge linebackers out a little bit more. They spread them out wide to contain, whether it's Daryl Williams or Clyde Edwards-Helaire. By the way, Jarrett McKinnon had 1 snap with a touch, and it went really, really well. And then he never got the ball again.
I don't get it.
Yeah. So they want to establish Clyde, but the issue is that I think the Ravens did a nice job adjusting in the second half of spreading out their defensive linemen and taking away either stretch runs or clear cutbacks to the other side, which is where he kind of got some yards in the first half. And by spreading them out, it was interesting because even on the fumble, it's a reach block. And I'm not the most technical person here, but it's sort of a reach block. Mm-hmm. Let me see, make sure I can get there for Joe Tooney, who, by the way, one of the most consistent guards in the NFL right now. And he just misses it because, God, I'm going to butcher his name. The rookie who forced the fumble.
He's
always
the other, yes. One of the always
playing so wide that he actually has an advantage. Of course, Clyde wants to cut it back instead of just hitting the hole directly based on the alignment. And now we have an issue where, yes, his right hand is right on the ball. Andy Reid said today, the learning lesson for that with Clyde is you would take the exchange and you would hold it with two hands, knowing that that's really all the Ravens have. Outside of like giving you a 5-yard loss, like the best option for them is to go hunting for the football. And you give credit to Owe for his mindfulness and his awareness, to know that he was in a position to make that play happen. And he
that drives me freaking crazy, by the way. I don't have any other analysis other than that. That evaluation drives me nuts. Like, yeah, you should have held the ball with two hands. And then you lost the game. Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. That's exactly what Holly said this morning. Just, what did Andy Reid say? Well, you know, you just got to hold the ball with two hands. And then you rewatch the tape and you're like, yeah, he's transferring it. He has the ball in one arm. Because he's going to make a cutback move. He's in his natural, consistent behavior on tape, as Eric Bieniemy would say. And the ball is exposed a little bit. Not fully. He's not running like DeMarcus Robinson on a punt return, but it is available for such an opportunity. Away also recovers a fumble. It's one, and there's a bigger picture I want to get to here in a little bit, Josh, but I mean, a rookie to have the awareness to do that, to also be the person who tackled and spun Patrick Mahomes, because I guess he had watched on film, tackling Patrick Mahomes conventionally doesn't work because he's going to get the ball off anyway. So you got to tackle him and kind of do this Aaron Donald move where he like twist you around. Shout out to Carson Wentz, because I don't know how you got up off the field, sir. It's like, damn, Carson Wentz isn't going to be healthy in November. I know this, you know this, everybody knows this, but
it's both ankles. It's
but he just holds on to the ball, and it's like Aaron Donald's going to roll you up because you don't want to go down. Just go down, man. But anyway, Away does a very similar move where he tackles him. And he sort of does this rodeo spin, and Mahomes obviously throws the pick because he hasn't been tackled like that, really, in that particular way, I don't believe, since Aaron Donald, who, by the way, forced two fumbles and has been the only defensive player ever to force Mahomes to fumble the ball twice in one game. All this is to say is that at some point, they are going to need to get 2 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards on the ground. The problem with that is you're probably going to need to have some different formations, because spreading it wide from the shotgun gives the defense the ability to tee off in a way that if you were in a more two tight end traditional set, the defense has to be a little bit more hesitant. And so if you're going to have, this is one of those questions where if you're going to have four tight ends on the active roster, and you want to run the ball to run some clock, I'd have a little bit more surety, Josh, that it would be better if maybe Patrick was under center handing the ball off versus it not being an RPO play, which I think is a correct call by you, it not being some bubble screen in the open field and you just handing the ball off to Clyde and the defense sort of anticipating that versus more multiple options or scenarios when you're running out of a more too wide, too tight end traditional set, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of the things that they were supposed to do more of coming into this year with the new offensive line. I mean, you don't have to be as tricky. You can just sort of line up and do the thing that you want to do. And
yep.
We haven't seen that yet. By the way, I just was curious. Owe was drafted with the 31st overall pick this year, which the Chiefs did give the Ravens for Orlando.
Oh, Brown, I Jr. didn't even think about that. Yeah, wow. I didn't even think about that last that night.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm not saying the Chiefs lost the trade or whatever, but no. I'm saying that is true. What I just said is true.
One of the saddest things is, ladies and gentlemen, there's supposed to be a Orlando Brown returns to Baltimore and dominates the Ravens story, and that evaporated last night.
Yeah.
So you'll never read that on theathletic.com, even though he played really, really well. Like, Orlando Brown might have had the greatest jump on offense between week 1 and week 2 Dude was excellent. And, you know, may have known all the schemes available that the Ravens were going to show. But look, he returned to his, you know, football hometown, essentially, because he watched his father play all those years for the original Ravens, as he likes to call them. But ladies and gentlemen, you'll never read that in The Athletic, because chaos ensues. And as I talk to a few friends in this industry, never forget, ladies and gentlemen, on the road specifically, you need chaos to beat Patrick Mahomes in a primetime game. Would you like for me to share, Josh?
Is this your big picture thing?
This is my big picture things.
Okay, let me sneak in real quick here just because I have it open that I can close this tab. The Chiefs average 0.54 EPA per play throwing the ball and negative 0.23 running the ball. Yikes. And it's going to be that way forever. It's going to be that way forever, and I'm going to die reading the EPA box score, and nothing's ever going to change. That's all. And most of those positive rushing EPA, by the way, came from that Tyreek Hill run.
This concludes my TED Talk. Yeah, the end around. Yeah. Just to add to that, man, they just have not figured out Clyde in a manner that we thought they would. Like, Clyde was supposed to...
Hold on, we?
I knew you take it home.
Give my name out your mouth.
Yes, Josh, we... or the Chiefs organization thought that he was going to open up more things, that he was going to be this great receiver, that he was going to be this scat bat, that he was going to be someone who was elusive. And he does show those tendencies from time to time, those qualities, I should say. But yeah, just the consistency has not been there. And what's most damning is when they need to run the ball, whether it's in a situation late in the game or in the red zone, the success rate is not high. Actually, the success rate is higher with Darrell Williams. That is statistically a fact. And maybe if we're in a similar situation against the Chargers on Sunday, I wonder, will Darrell Williams and or Jarrett McKinnon be in that situation versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Because, yes, we're getting into almost the 20th game of his career, and we're not seeing marketable improvement.
Go ahead.
I want you to get it off. Get it off. Get it out your system.
The fact that it's hard to find a market difference between Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams and Jerick McKinnon is exactly the point.
Yep.
Like, the most effective running back the Chiefs have had in the Andy Reid era, or the Patrick Mahomes era, I should say, was Damian Williams, a dude who they pulled off a scrap heap because he could run good routes, and he almost won Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
This is the point.
In my personal record book, he kind of did win Super Bowl MVP.
This is the whole point. This is whenever I talk, because again, you know.
He's co Super Bowl MVP. Let's be fair to Mahomes. Mahomes was incredible, remarkable. Like, career-altering performance in the fourth quarter. But, again, Patrick Mahomes can't do everything, and I think it would have been fair if he and Damian Williams were co-MVPs. But, you know, put a nail in this coffin of your point, Josh.
Running games collectively can impact games, although significantly less than the running game usually does, unless you were literally the Ravens last night. But individual running backs, with incredibly few, low single-digit exceptions, and even those guys, it's typically in a 1 or 2 year window, it is incredibly difficult for an individual running back to move the needle. What might move the needle, whenever you know, people talked about, oh, the Chiefs can make a luxury pick, they just won the Super Bowl, draft a running back, who cares? Well, I care now, because we're talking about this defense. It simply does not have enough depth or talent. And you could have made a pick at 32 that would have been an investment in your defense's long-term health. You could have, and you can go back and look at the fact that Andy Reid has had great performances from running backs who were not acquired as premium assets. And it's not really Clyde's fault. You're doing it within this within the scheme you're doing with the offensive line that you have in front of you. It's so dependent on all of that. And the idea that Clyde was going to come be some like offense opener was unfair to him from the jump. And now we're here, and I think we're probably approaching a bit of an overpass or whatever, where maybe more people are going to understand that, which is kind of unfortunate that like a fluky fumble is going to probably be the thing that has him fall out of favor with some people, whenever the whole issue is never about Clyde as a running back or whatever. It's about the fact that Damian Williams is the best running back Patrick Mahomes has had, the most productive running back he's had, and that the difference between those guys is super minimal, but the cost is incredibly large. There's a huge gulf there where that pick could have been used in a better spot. We're probably going to have a similar conversation about linebackers at some point too. And, you know, I don't want to like harp on it for the rest of the season. So maybe this will be the game that we get to talk about it, but it's really frustrating to me because I always felt it was really obvious and lots of people didn't.
Kareem Hunt's probably number
good
two.
Good call. Yeah.
Number Absolutely. Two and or number one, depending on your opinion.
No, you're right. Kareem Hunt was the most talented running back. Damian Williams had the biggest moments,
impact.
I guess.
Yeah, he had the biggest impact, unquestionably.
You're 100% right about Hunt, though.
Yeah, but so it's Kareem Hunt, Damian Williams, depending on your preference. And then we'll see where it goes from here. I just love that we're having this conversation. Seth is not here. But also, the Chiefs drafted Clyde because, you know, he was a skillful player under a cost-controlled, maybe fifth-year option at a running back position who was supposed to have more production based on his potential so far. So, hey, mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, the draft is a mystery, as some would say. Mm-hmm. Here's where I just want to remind fans that, yes, you root for a team that has Patrick Mahomes. And, yes, I expect, you know, it actually didn't get too bad from the Tuscaloosa fan category, in my opinion. Like, if you want to blame Spagnuolo, that's fine. If you want to put the ball on Patrick Mahomes' hands and only Patrick Mahomes' hands, totally cool. I mean, I get it. I mean, he's excellent. Just remind yourself, and I put this in my story in The Athletic, you know, the Chiefs had won 11 straight road games. The last time they had lost a road game was in Tennessee. It was November 10th, 2019. I'll never forget that day because it was the most absurd collapse I've ever seen in person at a football game. And it was also the last time the Chiefs lost before they went on to become Super Bowl champions. So, you know, some of these bookmarks are easy for me to remember for obvious reasons. All this is to say is when the Chiefs lose on the road in the Mahomes era, usually crazy things happen. And not only is it the Chiefs only play weird games. I mean, that's just a given, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when kickoff occurs, it's going to get weird.
Yeah.
It was chaotic last night because Mahomes does something that he usually doesn't do, which is obviously the interception. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has his first fumble of his career. So even though he hasn't been what you thought he was, at least he had great ball security up until this point. All of a sudden, Lamar Jackson turns into Superman after looking like he was going to become another one-dimensional, you know, like, man, like just didn't really play that well in a primetime game, you know, across from Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. All of a sudden, he becomes Superman. And I just need to remind people that, like, there was a botched snap in Tennessee. They played horrible defense against Ryan Tannehill. And by the way, we didn't even know Ryan Tannehill was good back then. Mm-hmm. There was a blocked punt, a blocked field goal, in which Harrison Butker maybe would have put the game into overtime. Again, Harrison Butker has never missed a game-winning field goal, or maybe even a game-tying field goal for that matter. Hey, but hey, if you can't get it through the line, because, you know, you don't block somebody, and that was Blake Bell's fault at the time and James Winchester's fault, the Ravens go crazy. The Titans go crazy. Again, the most exhilarating football game I have ever seen, ladies and gentlemen, in the Coliseum. There were defensive touchdowns. Marcus Peters is involved. Again, Aaron Donald basically took... How nice can I be, Josh? I mean, they put Cam Irving on Aaron Donald. Okay? Yeah. Like, come on! So, that game is obviously the most explosive game in regular season NFL history. Both teams score in the 50s. Mahomes has to throw up a desperation shot. But you need utter chaos. Perhaps the most conventional, like, huh, the other team was just better? Road game was in Seattle in the 2018 season towards December, where I thought, oh, man, the defense just isn't good. And Russell Wilson is, like, a Hall of Famer. And, like, they started two rookie cornerbacks against Russell Wilson in prime time. And, you know, like, you get beat. But, like, even, you know, even that game got a little hairy at the end just because Mahomes was once again trying to rally the team again. But all this is to say is that you lost by 1 point playing, what, a C-plus game? And the Ravens Ravens doing excellent things when they absolutely had to get excellent things. The Tennessee Titans won that game by 3 points, even though they won the entire fourth quarter. The Chiefs don't score a single point against the Baltimore Ravens in the fourth quarter Sunday night, and they only lose by one. The Los Angeles Rams had to score 54. So, take a deep breath and acknowledge that in a lot of ways, yes, we had beaten Wink Martindale to death. He'd finally given in. He gave in. Maybe I should stop telling coaches what to do.
Right.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. But some of this stuff is not that hard. But at the same time, you need utter chaos. You need things outside of Mahomes to beat a Mahomes-led team when he's healthy. And so, yes, people will always acknowledge, and we wrote about this, Josh, like, hey, like, well, you know, that 13-9 game between the Colts, I mean, that was just... That was just running all over him. Well, Patrick was hurt that day. And he got hurt because Cam Irving, again, wasn't great. Justin Houston got, you know, kind of went in the time machine and came back out. But in all these primetime games, you need, like, things that are very unconventional, very chaotic. And it was really fascinating to be in a building where all 70,000 people were like, oh, my God, we beat the Chiefs. Like, what? He fumbles? What? How did we just win? Like, even Lamar Jackson's like, damn, did we just win? I think we just won the game. Like, it's Mahomes plays excellent. He does one mistake and then chaos ensues, and that's ultimately what you need to beat the Chiefs, even when they don't play their best. And that's wild to really think about from a big picture standpoint, as we still got 15 of these more games left to go.
It's a nice little pick me up at the end. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. But we'll do another episode coming up. It's Chargers next, right? It's been a long couple days, which will be interesting for a variety of reasons. Because Justin Herbert looks great, and I don't know, maybe Austin Eckler will run for 500 yards. We'll figure that out then. But if you want to read Nate's post game story up on theathletic.com, that's right there. You can follow him on Twitter @ByNateTaylor. I am @JBBriscoe. That's a pretty good send off, Nate. But if you got one more thing to send people with, now's the time.
I know that Chiefs fans have put it upon my shoulders to get Juan Thornhill on the field. So best believe, ladies and gentlemen, I will do the Lord's work. I will be your servant in asking everybody at One Arrowhead Drive, why is Juan Thornhill not playing? Where's Juan? Just, you know, just one of the better defenders who appears to be healthy. Where in the world is Juan Thornhill? So yes, I'll ask it Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week.
If somebody listening right now wants to make a little Photoshop of him wearing a striped red and white sweater and hat and just caption it, "Where's Wando?" I would also be okay with that.
Excellent.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.